the three types of dukkha. There's a lot of talk that Buddhist teachers do about dukkha or suffering, but we rarely look at its components, different types of it. And the Buddha once said there were, in fact, three types of it. All of his teaching on the subject is contained in the Dukkata Sutta. It's so compact a teaching that it sounds to me like a talk he must have given after a very long and tiring day. He got it over with pretty quickly. Taking a close look at what composes suffering is important to anyone who has stress or unhappiness in their lives, especially if they have any aspiration not to be unhappy. It's all about what my first Zen teacher covered every time he spoke: preference. We like these shoes and not those. We'd rather bathe in pleasure than toil and adversity. We want chocolate ice cream, not vanilla, please. But naturally, it's to be expected that we will like some things and not others. Of course, liking, not liking, and being neutral about things is built right in to our body and brains. It pervades our minds. It's constantly a factor in what we choose to do. And it gets us into deep dukkha over and over. So we all have to deal with dukkha virtually every day. So that's why I wanted to take this closer look at the three types of dukkha. And as I was brushing up on this topic, I discovered that the interpretations that do exist varied widely. I should say wildly. But there's just this one sutta on the topic, and there's only one translation of it into English, which was in 2009 by Maurice O'Connell Walsh. You know, I've also relied on some Dharma talks by other teachers and an article by Tony Bernard, who wrote How to Be Sick and How to Wake Up. She's used to be a lawyer who had to leave the practice of law due to chronic illness, so I feel some affinity for her. Here's the entirety of the Dukkata Sutta on suffering. Monks, there are these three kinds of suffering. What three? Suffering caused by pain. Suffering caused by the formations or conditioned phenomena. Suffering due to change. It is for the full comprehension, clear understanding, ending, and abandoning of these three forms of suffering that the Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. That's it. So let's start with the title of this tiny little sutta, Dukkata. It's an abstract noun that encompasses suffering in the most general sense, according to Walsh, the translator. After scratching my head for a while, I decided that this term could take under its wing the confusion that a lot of people have with external and internal causes of suffering. For example, when a Syrian village is bombarded and starved for months. That's suffering. There's no doubt about it. When a 2-year-old cries because she doesn't get to play with a toy, that's suffering too. When I'm impatient in a grocery line, I've got dukkha going on. Now, it's hard for us to imagine that the Syrian villagers would not have a negative emotional response to their months of horror. Some internal experience that we don't actually know about. The 2-year-old can't be expected to handle her disappointment any better than she does. Whereas I have the tools to end my suffering. And I fervently hope that the Syrians will soon find compassion and help so they can heal from their long period of trauma. Dukkha would seem to encompass all of these scenarios. So, moving on to the actual subject of the sutta, types of dukkha, which is not so broad an idea. The first type mentioned is dukkha. The root of this kind of suffering is the fact that we are embodied awareness. We have bodies. We're very sensitive receptors of experience through our 5 physical senses, plus the 6th sense, our minds, all constantly bombarding us with sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches, plus thoughts. For example, there's the touch of your clothes going on right now, though you may not notice it. That's because of how you focus your attention. There's no harm in the fact that you don't notice it, but it shows how powerful our ability to direct our attention is when it comes to dukkha. So here we are, constantly hit, both physically and mentally, by what's going on in the material world. The little impacts, like the feeling of our clothing, we probably don't notice. The big ones give us no choice. If they hurt, we have pain. If they trigger certain other receptors in the brain, we have pleasure. The rest of the stuff we don't notice. That leaves a neutral feeling. Together, these 3 responses are called Vedana. Some people these days call it Vedana, but I learned it as Vedana. That's what you're going to hear from me. These 3 feeling tones, pleasure, neutral, displeasure, are the prongs on the trident of dukkha that's constantly poking at us. Every time I talk about Vedana, I have to point out that it's automatic. It's a function of the body and the brain, over which we have close to 0 control. And any control that we do have comes only with very intensive practice. But when the mind begins to churn Vedana and responds with aversion, craving, or disinterest, that's the start of the trouble that we can do something about. Say I get pneumonia from a flu that's going around, like I did this spring. There's a lot of physical discomfort. There's a loss of energy, so I can't do much. Plus, I can't be around other people because my impaired immune system isn't fighting these germs, and they're basically being weaponized. So I don't want to give them to other people, and I don't want any germs they've got to add to the mix. And it all has a very negative impact on my body and my mind and how I conduct my life. But it's not dukkha-dukkha yet. That starts when I'm aware that it's unpleasant and I don't like it. The Buddha said that the cause of dukkha is clinging. That can take the form of desire or aversion. Sometimes it's hard to separate the threads of wanting and disliking as they kind of spin into the ropes of clinging. So what am I clinging to in my aversion to illness? I want something other than what is. I want not to have gotten the flu that gave me the pneumonia and will worsen my lung disease. I want to be healthy and have the world back under control, preferably my control. And I definitely don't like all the illness I had from March through May of this year. Essentially, craving means rebelling against the truth of what is in the moment. As Bernhard tells us, we have dukkha because of our longing for the circumstances of our lives to be different. We are resisting the truth that bad stuff just happens. Into every life, some rain must fall. And it falls into the lives of those we love. That's life. And rebelling against it only causes more suffering in addition to the physical pain which results directly from events. This is what's often called the second arrow. Life shoots us in the arm or the stomach or wherever. And we shoot countless more arrows at ourselves by fussing over it. The way to get rid of this suffering is to recognize that rain simply is going to fall on us sometimes. When I was sick for so long this spring, I went beyond disliking the discomfort and interference with my life. I didn't just dislike it. I often thought things like, this is awful. I tried so hard to avoid the flu and I still got it at the end of the season by going to a funeral I couldn't miss, and it just isn't fair. And then I started to resent not being able to take part in important things or anything that was fun, and the house I was stuck in started to shrink, and I got irritable toward Carla, and she didn't like that. And then there were all sorts of ways I made myself suffer even more. So here we're on the threshold of type 2 dukkha. The three types of dukkha really kind of flow together. And before we cross over, I want to pause here to clarify the important point that dukkha is also caused by our internal response to the neutral and the pleasant, not just the painful. If we don't really care, that neutral feeling still has dukkha. And if we crave and chase what we imagine will be pleasant, or cling to what already is, that's dukkha too. Those fit into dukkha types 2 and 3, basically. The types reflect how they are caused. from what's kind of blatant to fairly subtle. The second type is called, and I'll spell it, Sankhara Dukkha. S-A-N-K-H-A-R-A. Sankhara Dukkha. It's the suffering that's caused by all conditioned phenomena, which is most stuff in the world. Everything comes into being from whatever pre-existed. In other words, you've got furniture in your house. It came into being from trees and from people cutting down the trees and sawing them and making furniture out of it. This takes us back to the body, which is a conditioned phenomena. Two people are attracted to each other. The resulting zygote starts to split, multiply, and grow, and then there's a new body in the world. Our thoughts are conditioned phenomena also, but we'll get to that a little later. Have you ever stopped to consider what a burden the body is? We get it to wake up in the morning, get out of bed, wash up, dress, eat something, and brush our teeth, and then we're all set, right? Wrong. Because then we have to do something else for a while until we have to use the bathroom, blow our noses, or have lunch, then go home and change clothes, get dinner, find some way to relax or recreate, then go to bed and start all over. The body is never all set. It's constantly undergoing change because the conditions that support life are always changing. Food gets digested, more is required. And heaven help you if you need medicine, physical therapy, etc. I have recently spent 3 hours a day just keeping this body alive and functioning. Really sick people spend almost all of their time laboring to meet the body's maintenance needs. It's no wonder that people come to feel that they can, or at least ought to be able to, control events so that they're happy in life. That leads to people just taking credit for when they're happy. Now, when they're not happy, they're to blame. We do the best we can, and sometimes it's pretty good. But the illusion that we should be able to control events is a quite vicious source of dukkha. Once simple survival conditions are maintained, we have to acquire materials needed to keep doing this. In this day and age, that means going to work at some job or business, dealing with the conditions of living, making a living, takes a lot of time and effort because conditions are always changing. The same slipperiness is also true about all phenomena outside of the body. Polar ice melts, forests burn, car keys go missing, businesses shrink and let their employees go. And why did I come into this room? It's exhausting to just keep coping. Considering how labor-intensive it is, just staying alive, what's truly amazing is that we hardly take notice of it. As I said a little while ago, another sort of conditioned phenomenon is our mental activity. This includes and goes beyond our fussing at reality that leads to dukkha dukkha. Sankhara dukkha arises when we intentionally formulate thoughts. Whenever I teach the basics of practice, I say repeatedly that thoughts arise on their own, like bubbles from a bubble-blowing machine floating through our heads. I've spent hours in meditation watching these thoughts float by, and they are very plentiful. If I don't choose to go with them, they'll float on past. But if I willingly take up a train of thought, then I begin to form thoughts intentionally. And then I'm in the territory of Sankara Dukkha. That's where I was whenever I fell into thinking about how awful it was to be sick. This is a more sophisticated way of craving for things to be different than they are, than just liking and not liking. Our really agile minds can generate Sankara Dukkha all by themselves without direct sensory input from the world around us. Say, for example, a coworker or client or whatever says something negative about you to the boss or to Yelp, and it causes some economic loss to you. You probably don't like that. So that's called dukkha-dukkha. But there are many other ways you'll suffer too. Anger, embarrassment, maybe hatred, yearning for revenge or exoneration, a grudge that can last a long time, perhaps even an adverse shift in your self-concept. The original negative comment isn't the cause of all these emotions. Your mind is. The original comment may have stretched your budget for a while, and that may have distressed you, but it's probably nothing like the torment your conditioned mental fabrications can inflict on you. The good news is that after a few years of meditating, most of us understand this is a major source of dukkha, and there is something we can do to alleviate all this suffering. You all know some of the techniques already, like recognizing that you're thinking things that will make you unhappy and changing the channel. You can say some metaphrases, or think about something else, or watch your breathing for a minute. This is probably quite familiar to most of us. We know the kind of dukkha that comes from this unpleasant thinking most intimately. And it's not just painful vedana involved in Sankara Dukkha. Neutral feeling is also. In his translator's notes, Walsh makes the point that neutral feeling in Sankara Dukkha is, and I quote, "the indifference of those who do not understand the fact of suffering and are not moved by it." These are the callous people who regard others and themselves with a closed-hearted meanness. It's an extremely isolated and barren existence. And if they claim happiness, all they can point to as its cause is their possessions and accomplishments, unaware that true happiness is an inside job. And I kind of hate to tell you this, but pleasure also has a place in the realm of suffering. It's associated with type 3 called, again, and I'll spell it, viparinama. V-I-P-A-R-I-N-A-M-A. Viparinama dukkha. And it's based on impermanence, a characteristic of all experience. Whatever the factors that give rise to a conditional phenomenon, like bodies and forests and jobs, they're going to change. In fact, they're changing now and always have been. Here's where striving for pleasure meets its most brutal defeat. We can work for it, fight for it, commit crimes for pleasure, and if you ever get your life set up just the way you like it, in a heartbeat, it will crack and begin to crumble. We know this. However dimly, even in the midst of a yummy chocolate milkshake I drank with dinner last night, I knew there would be a bloated feeling, sluggishness, and calories to pay for it. And when I couldn't have any more of that shake, I'd be left with a lingering aftertaste that could be sour and quite unpleasant, and a longing for the next time I could have that sweet chocolate experience. It's insidious, isn't it? In the midst of pleasure is a barb of suffering, and deep inside ourselves we know it. And this pulls the rug out from under pleasure. Buddha taught repeatedly that nothing impermanent can be fully satisfactory. If this tweaks a chord of resentment in us, Bernhard wrote, we should try instead to remember it only hurts us more to want permanence for ourselves or loved ones because we're not going to get it. A world in which things don't change would be a frozen, lifeless tableau, like moons far out in a solar system. If you want life, change comes with it. Now, Bernhard is a good Buddhist and points to a solution to the three types of suffering. It's a bit like the old RAIN formula: recognize, accept, investigate, and know it's not personal. It's not yours or a part of you. Noticing and knowing what you're seeing is the indispensable first step. And to do this, it's important to read the Dharma and listen to talks like this so you can identify that this is a cause of suffering when it comes up. Then you need to accept the truth of it, that it is happening. And then investigate, not intellectually, definitely not by figuring it out, but by letting yourself feel how your mental activity is affecting you. So I always say, get out of the story and into the body. Often when you look right at and feel it deeply, you can see through the conditioning that has caused this suffering. You can see through to the attitudes or the values that have led you to think these thoughts. And that's how insight works. Bernhard has what she calls a tracing exercise. As an example, she told about feeling cranky during the holidays at home by yourself. So to deal with this, she focused, really concentrated on her feelings, and became mindful then of the subtle thoughts that were associated with it, such as, I should be able to go to my daughter's home, or it's not fair that I can't travel. She said that she knew immediately that I'd found the source of my crankiness and that I had a choice. I could continue to stay in the throes of Sankara Dukkha, or I could let go of my longing for what I could not have. I let it go and immediately felt a great sense of relief. This is insight meditation doing its job. Looking at suffering, seeing its cause, and ending it by letting us stop clinging to its mental conditions, the underlying ideas that caused it. This is what teachers mean when we say that this practice ends suffering. It does, on a daily basis. Don't believe me. Just observe this in your own experience and trust it. And please do have faith that the more you use this practice, the less suffering you'll have. Thank you.